My husband, Dick, asked me what it was about. I said it was basically about how we human beings, both as individuals and as societies, keep ignoring the wisdom that's passed down to us, and so we keep making the same mistake. If we can't learn from the past, I said, how can civilization survive? He answered, well, can it? And I thought that was a good question. You see, we just never learn. Our parents, grandparents, teachers, and friends really tried to tell us the things we needed to know to be part of a civil society, but we only listened to part of it, and we only followed a fraction of that. I mean, take a kid. You can't tell a kid anything. Childhood is dangerous, but they just don't pay attention to the advice we give them. My mother said, Nancy, if you keep teasing that dog, she's going to bite you. But I did, and she did. We warn children not to touch the stove, to look both ways before crossing the street, to remember their mittens. But it would surprise us if any kid always remembered all of those rules. Remember, you'll shoot your eye out, kid. And it gets worse as kids get older. Most adolescents get ample warning about the dangers of sex, drugs, alcohol, and driving the snowmobile on the frozen lake. But I would guess that a majority push those boundaries at least occasionally. It's the adolescent's developmental task to separate themselves from their elders and try things out for themselves. It's nature. Adolescent horses challenge the dominance of the herd and their owners. Adolescent rabbits fight with each other and stay outside the burrow for much longer than adults, and so are prey to owls. For animals, it's a way for nature to thin the population. We would rather it not be that for our children. At any age, we humans are resistant to new information. Whether it's what we're forced to learn in school or what we should be learning from experience. We are prone to making premature conclusions and then very resistant to changing them to accommodate new facts. If there's more information than we can easily digest, we will base very firm opinions on whatever pieces we already agree with. The less depth of information we have about a topic, the firmer our opinions about it are likely to be. All of these tendencies are in direct opposition to the need to maintaining a civil society and a stable civilization. Civilization is not a single thing. It's a grand construct made up of the knowledge and behavior of every person and all the traces of all the thought, work, and expression of the people who came before us, which have been preserved and passed on by a relatively few people who recognized their value. It is and always has been so delicate as to be improbable. Since I was a child, I've been fascinated by the idea of lost knowledge and lost civilization. I lived in Scotland during my first year of school and was taken to ruins and museums. And the simplified story I got to explain the Middle Ages was that the Romans disappeared, and so all they knew was forgotten, and Britain became wild and dangerous and poor, and the heroes were the few who saved and studied manuscripts, hid and protected treasures, and traveled afar to bring back ideas. This simplified version of that period is the root of the fantasy genre in popular literature and the root of much of my worldview. Of course, it's a lot more complicated than that. The Romans pulled out because they were under attack from local barbarians, and there were no reinforcements because Rome was under attack in Italy. That left Britain in control of dozens of factions a la Game of Thrones, with the church as the primary unifying force. And so they all fought each other and eventually fought the Vikings. The church was the preserver of knowledge, but it was pretty conflicted in that respect. Monasteries collected and reproduced manuscripts, and most scholars were churchmen, but they were also religious conservatives living in a strict hierarchy. Many monastic libraries were actively and zealously purged of materials that were seen as anti-Christian. And in any case, only those that were perceived to be currently useful by the church were reproduced and spread. The church was mainly concerned with current politics and their own religion. Science, history, mathematics, and other cultures were of very little interest. After all, in their opinion, the world was going to end in the year 1000, so being right with God was the only really important issue other than money. Does this sound familiar? Our fantasy of wizards is the last trace of rare secular scholars who collected information not valued by the church and experimented with unsystematic science. They were people interested in lost knowledge, arcane formulae, ancient legends, and mythical beasts and peoples. Basic chemistry or physics can certainly look like magic, and the best definition of magic is any technology beyond your understanding. The less actual knowledge you have, the less logical and understandable the world is. The breakdown of society and consequent loss of knowledge is not unique to Western Europe. Parallel events have happened in civilizations all over the world and throughout time. Wars always result in the destruction of civil society and the loss of cultural material. The Taliban destroyed the Bamiyan Buddha sculptures, along with untold amounts of Afghani historical materials. The war in Syria has destroyed 2,000-year-old archaeological sites, along with countless public records and probably unrecoverable civil culture. Right now, our own tendency to reject given knowledge and our intellectual laziness is a danger to our society. I believe that right now we are in danger of losing our own civilization. I know that many of you agree with me here, and we are all pretty uncomfortable about it. We are in the midst of a national existential moral crisis, even more important than the political one. The Trump administration is only a symptom. The real crisis is the lack of common respect for the truth. But I'd like to point out that our discomfort is potentially a good thing. Educators recognize that a certain amount of disequilibrium, an uncomfortable lack of balance or completion or sureness, is actually necessary to learning. Learning is hard work, and so as long as you're perfectly comfortable with whatever you already know, you have no need to invest effort in it. But when what you know becomes uncomfortable, you may find the strength to do something. I believe that with luck and with work, we will come to see the Trump fiasco and its supporting social movement as a great opportunity. As evil and dangerous as it is, this crisis is giving us the gift of disequilibrium, and if we use it correctly, correctly, it may energize us to make substantial changes for the betterment of our already good society. We need to resist, but how we resist is crucial. It's no use to fight the rejection of facts with half facts and shallow logic. We can't fight shallow and short-sighted thinking with shallow and short-sighted arguments. We need to be better, deeper, more consistent, and fairer than they are, or we will have lost the moral background of our society, even if we save it from the conservatives. People all over the country are already doing good work. The Women's March was wonderful and unquestionably effective. The resistance to the health care repeal, largely on moral grounds, made enough difference to get the repeal dropped. Who knew it would be so complicated? Academics who survived McCarthyism are speaking out about the dangers of repeating mistakes, as are Holocaust survivors. So what can the rest of us do? We need to continue to stick up for our moral principles and continue to promote civil discourse and general civility to the best of our abilities. Those of us who are naturally conflict-averse need to be worried enough about the greater dangers to risk an active defense. In doing this, we must not be dragged into the crude level of social discourse that has become the norm. After all, civility is the central requirement of the kind of civilization we want to preserve. We cannot prove the importance of civility by acting the same way as the deplorables. There's very little use in attacking Uncle John at the dinner table or arguing on Facebook. The right is very sure of its information and very resistant to any facts that challenge it. But any small inaccuracy or unfairness from us will be seen as equivalent to what they know is inaccurate or unfair in their own position. We need to think more deeply and argue our positions more responsibly than they do in order to win. We've all heard the meme going around that advises us before speaking to ask, is it true, is it kind, and is it necessary? And does it improve upon the silence? This is very good advice for interpersonal communication, but I would also suggest questions for moral and political discourse. Is it accurate? Is it fair? Is it thoughtful? And does it avoid unnecessary rancor? Facebook is only one venue for political argument, but it's been a very important one in the last few months. Both sides have flooded the discourse with stories, but we are weakened when organizations like Occupy Democrats and others, who I usually agree with, but they use misleading or highly biased arguments or exaggerate small inconsistencies. Humor making fun of their absurdity is amazingly healing for us. And humor can also often make very strong arguments. But when humor is cruel or unfair, it will not help us win this battle. Here's what I think we need to do. When you know something they say is wrong, don't just say it's wrong. Figure out why. It's much more effective to argue the underlying reasons than to simply attack the position. We're more likely to find some agreement there. Almost all conservatives seem to think that we need to get rid of Obamacare But as we see, some are troubled by the idea of poor people left without insurance. Next, check your facts. The real Kool-Aid drinkers are not impressed by facts, but they're not going to be swayed by argument anyway. People who are nearer the center or in doubt, or those who simply have adopted opinions from their close environment, may be swayed by facts, but we lose if our facts turn out to be false or unsupported. Remember that the larger issue here is the new lack of common respect for the truth. Next, don't shout and don't attack. Forwarding the kind of articles that basically say nanny nanny boo boo about the healthcare fiasco just decreases the likelihood of its proponents learning something from the process. Accusing them all of being vinches will not encourage what charitable tendencies they are trying to repress. To save civility, we have to be civil. Whenever you can, cite your sources. It's much stronger to say that the statistics from the Congressional Budget Office or the AMA, or it's much stronger to lean on, excuse me, the statistics from the Congressional Budget Office or the AMA than to just label their alternative facts as untrue. Use specific information from history, not generalities. And pick your battles. Look for opportunities to find some common ground. Changing minds requires different tactics than winning contests. This fight is not about winning arguments. It's about sowing disequilibrium. We need to find ways to make our opponents uncomfortable with their own conclusions. If we are fighting for truth and defending morality and civility, we must scrupulously use truth and a high standard of morality and civility in that fight. This fight is about preserving civilization. We're fighting to keep what our forefathers built, learned, and taught us that makes our society free, fair, and stable. We need to show that we have learned from that history and act on what we have learned. In this time of division, may we be the force that draws our civil society back together. This is the American way, and this is true patriotism. Thank you.
As always, your sermons and the children's story were delightful. I really believe in us being animals, or there being some sort of pattern to different creatures and what they do and don't do. And that, coupled with decay and death, seems to me that history has indicated that we're incapable of sustained civilization. Can you speak to that?
In the large scale, I agree with you. In the current